I think the progress in AI is still going to outpace, I think, what we can do as a defenders. And even though I'm in security, I think that's the way it should be, right? Like, we should not try and defend things before there's a need for defense. You have to let people, build crazy things, and you got to come in there and say, okay, now it's gone crazy enough.
Welcome to the Cybersecurity Defenders Podcast. Every Friday, Lima Charlie hosts Defender Fridays, a 30-minute live fireside chat hosted by our founder, Maxime Lamothe-Brossard, who sits down with an industry expert and hands-on practitioner for an unfiltered conversation on a topic related to cybersecurity defense. These chats are so insightful, it made sense to share them on the podcast as well, 1 week after they originally aired. If you'd like to join us live, you can register at limacharlie.io/defender-fridays. And a reminder, this podcast is brought to you by Lima Charlie, maker of the SecOps Cloud Platform, infrastructure for security operations where everything is built API first. You can think of it as a backend for your MSSP that enables you to scale with confidence as your business grows. You can get started today for free at limacharlie.io. Now let's get into it.
Welcome everybody to Defender Fridays. Usual kind of disclaimer. So, we just like to talk to all kinds of different folks in the cybersecurity defensive industry, learn about new things that maybe we didn't know about, and kind of make that circle larger. So that's why we bring everybody here. It's not meant to be like a slide deck at all. It's really, all about just having a discussion around an interesting, topic with interesting people. And so on that very specific point, today, I'm sorry, what's the right pronunciation for your name? I just want to make sure I don't.
Saurabh.
Saurabh?
Saurabh, yeah.
Awesome. Well, welcome to Defender Fridays. Do you want to start maybe with doing a quick introduction about yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so I'm the founder and CEO of Realm Labs. We are an AI security company. Pretty much, thousands of companies that are out there at the moment. We have some different technology, but we'll get into that later. I've been in the security industry now for almost 15 years. I was at Carnegie Mellon, where I did my PhD in side channel attacks. Then I joined Symantec Research Labs as a researcher and started working in AI security at that time in 2016, which was a very new topic at that time. I was there doing both foundational research, working with products like DLP and UBA. Then I joined Splunk after that, and I was leading the AI-based threat research team that we had. I was there for a little under 2 years, and then I decided to found this company.
Very cool. So I know the thing you kind of wanted to talk about today was as a tagline, right, was like securing AI from within. I feel... to me, what that says is really through inspection of how AI is operating and how we do that. And I feel like that is a super nascent thing. But at the same time, I bet I'm completely wrong. And a bunch of really intelligent people have been thinking about this problem for a while. For me, I know it kind of came out recently with OpenClaude was kind of like the explosion of like everybody all of a sudden wanted to like monitor what was going on. But what's that landscape like?
So just to set up some sort of background, right? Like AI security is not really a new problem. It's been around for about 10 years. So I would say maybe in 2014, what people figured out was that ML at that time, wasn't AI. But what people figured out was that it was the algorithms were getting really good at like detecting like anything, right? Like facial recognition, detecting cats versus dogs. But some researchers at Google, I think, figured out that no matter how they were improving in their original tasks, they were always vulnerable to an adversary being able to fool them around, right? So they could just add like a small, delta noise to that image, which was calculated in a very specific way, and that would always fool the model. And at the time, people didn't actually make a big deal out of it. We thought that this is like some very weird nuance of the way training was happening at the time. It's a temporary problem. It's been 10 years. We have made very little progress on that problem. It's a foundational issue with how machine learning and AI algorithms work. Now we've just applied it to much larger models, models which are not predictive, but are generative in capacity. So your large language models and so on. And a challenge has been that now these LLMs are kind of like acting like an operating system. And We are trying to control what they're doing, but we are applying the same logic we applied to malware detection, like in the 90s, that, hey, let's apply some patterns, some signatures. We can sort of count these badness or bad behaviors or misbehaviors of AI in a finite number of ways. What we figured out with malware detection was that as soon as it became polymorphic, you couldn't do that anymore, right? You had to really sit in the kernel and you had to observe, how sort of different types of like kernel operations are being made. But in AI, we are still at that point where we think that somehow we can control all the behaviors by just looking at what's the input and what's the output. The generative models are becoming incredibly powerful at this point in time, and they are quickly getting out of hands in terms of what you can do from the outside. I speak with my friends at like the foundational research, foundational model companies. The kind of behaviors they are seeing with AI are just incredibly weird, right? Like sycophancy, like deception. These are not behaviors you can catch from the outside. So we are trying to see like, okay, is there another way? Like machine learning is kind of for AI, it's kind of like a black box, but we do know like there's some computations happening inside. We need to kind of go listen to or observe those computations to see what really is happening inside its brain. So that's where we think is going to be the real difference maker in how AI is secured, as opposed to what we are trying to do today.
And does that, so the way that you talk about this, to me, the language seems kind of getting closer to how people talk about like explainability of AI. Am I right there?
Yeah, it's both explainability and interpretability, which is like trying to, in a way, in a human way, trying to understand what are these processes telling us. There are many reasons to do this. It's not just a security or safety reason. Like Anthropic might want to figure out why their model does 2 + 2, or you might have heard of this case, right? That no matter how many advanced models come up, you ask them to count the number of R's in strawberry and they always get it wrong. Right? It's not a security problem, but it is certainly a misbehavior. And if it's happening with strawberry, guess what's going to happen in some different shape and form in a different scenario where it would become a security problem. So they might want to figure this out just for their own use case. We think that it has significant implications. This explainability piece, interpretability piece, has a significant implication of why these models have these constant new ways of misbehaving, which sort of erodes trust in them. And if you think about security, security is essentially a critical failure of trust, right? So we think that being able to solve this problem is fundamental to our ability to kind of control AI's behavior.
So my naive take here is, or like, naively, if I had to try to solve this problem, what I would do is like, I would throw another, LLM at the LLM and try to, make it kind of like understand what's going on. I suspect that there's a lot more to it than that. So what part of the problem space that you kind of like laid out, do we have a solution for, and how does it work, and where we not have a solution for?
Yeah, so it is a new field. There is no doubt about it. There are a lot of things that come out about these models' behaviors that we still cannot explain, even with the techniques that we have today. The original idea has been that, right? The first idea was basically, okay, let's just use like some regular expressions, some patterns, some keywords. Okay, we know that doesn't work because AI can talk to you in 100 different languages. And so that was easy one to rule out. The second one that you're talking about is very interesting because it's like, okay, why not we use a large language model to understand another large language model's behavior, right? The problem is that sometimes the behaviors that we are worried about, and that may not be a CISO worry, right? So I'm not speaking just for the CISOs here, but might be a worry to kind of like it as, for people who are making these models or people who are worried about their behaviors. Behaviors like deception, behaviors like sycophancy and other kinds of things, they are so subtle that we actually don't have a good way of like measuring them from just by looking at the input and the output. So even if you have the input and the output, forget about giving it to a model. You can give it to a very smart human and they would still not be able to tell. Like, can you tell this with another person? Can you tell them that they are being too sycophantic to you because they want something from you? Not really, right? But with humans, we cannot look at what's happening inside their brain, right? But with models, we can. So I think that would be the right way of kind of figuring out that, okay, it's doing the same thing. It's being nice to me, but the part of the brain that's kind of using to be nice to me is not the one that it uses for another person. Is there something different in this behavior? Is there something more deceptive about this behavior? And that is not always visible, at least not in a short period of time, from the outside.
So does that mean that I feel like the direction where you're leading is sort of the one where you're saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, is, hey, we look at the weight, right, of the neural net, and from the weights we can see what gets activated when and the regions, and I feel like that is like it sounds shockingly similar to what people in biology are doing, right? When looking at the brain and like, what part lights up when you see the face of somebody you like and all of that stuff. Is it as quote unquote as simple as that?
I would say it's similar. To some degree, it's easier because brains are more complicated than models. I may get into trouble with this with the AI people, but brains are still more complicated than models. Not all parts of them are visible that easily, right? Because it's a 3D object, many neurons, many parts of the brains are not accessible to you. The other thing is that you can't make like infinite copies of the same brain, right? A human brain, but you could do that with models. So interestingly, you bring it up. I've seen actually a lot of people who did biology and sort of neuroscience actually being excited about this field because they can actually get much better results with AI brain than they could do. Like there's no IRBs involved in that sense. But it's kind of weird because Anthropic might have seen this nowadays. When they retire a new model or retire an old model, they kind of do an interview for it to ask it how does it feel about like being retired and is it okay? And they made it write a blog. It's getting weird out there. I must admit. So I don't want your audience to get the sense like, oh, these guys are like going crazy in San Francisco, right? But that's sort of the direction where we are all going towards. But there is an like an what is that HR interview for a model before it gets fired these days. So.
Man, I feel like things have been getting weird for a while now. It's not
So I saw
getting
that
better.
you are in Mountain View, and I live in Mountain View as well. And I feel like San Francisco is like 2 centuries ahead of us, and we are like 30 miles away.
Nice. So what then, okay, you're starting to am I correct actually in just saying like you're starting to kind of like do this analysis? Where are we in let's say the spectrum of, hey, we're barely starting to get an idea of what to do to, this is a solved problem. I'm assuming we're somewhere in the middle, but like whereabouts are we and what velocity are we going in that?
I think we have made quite a bit of progress on some of the safety related issues. So if you think of harmfulness, you think of like all kinds of bad like weapons, cyber weapons, hacking, all those kinds of examples. I think those kinds of problems we have made quite a bit of progress, at least made quite a bit of progress compared to what we could do just by looking at the prompts and responses, right? So these kinds of approaches are now predominantly being used in the foundational model maker companies to when they deploy their own models. It's a significant part of their stack, or if it's not there, they are betting on it to going forward. We believe that prompt injections are also an area where you would find much better value, and we have some results for that ourselves. On if you think of prompt injection, it's kind of like an ADHD behavior, right? That the model was meant to do something, then a new shiny object came in here in some context, and the model forgot what it was about to do, and then it started doing the new thing, right? That behavior is a much better track, much easier to track when you can see inside the model than when you can just see the input and the output, because the behavior is not always the prompt injected behavior may not always be harmful in the harmful sense, right?
That is a wonderful analogy, and I simultaneously feel attacked.
Yeah, but that's kind of the way. I mean, again, like pardon me, but yeah, there's always when you make any kind of equivalence with human beings, there is always some room for mistakes. What we do know is that I think I can speak for myself. Like we have seen the results, we have seen compared our results with like the other techniques, and it definitely is significantly better. It's not perfect. It's not perfect at the moment, but if you think about it, it's also like a function of the sort of how new this field is. how different ideas are being tried. There have been some setbacks as well, where people have realized and they thought that this would solve everything, and it didn't quite solve everything. Models still remain complex. How all these things are interacting in a manifold that has nearly like high-dimensional manifold with infinite points is not going to be figured out all in one day. But I'm pretty confident, I'm pretty sure that we're already at that point where these kinds of techniques are already outperforming the other older techniques of fine-tuning models. The other techniques might still continue to have an advantage from a cost perspective, right? That you don't need to throw necessarily like a large language model if you can. The dumb attacks would still be figured out with signatures and patterns, right? But we're talking about the sophisticated ones. So
Got it.
already, yeah, a lot of progress has been made, I think, in the last 1 year.
And do you think it's so things are moving so fast, the models are moving so fast. Sometimes one kind of gut feel that I have is, we started hearing about prompt injection, I'm going to say, let's say 2 years ago, right? We started and at the time it was quite easy. I kind of know intellectually that it's gotten a lot better, but I don't really have a feel for how much better nowadays models are compared to before. Like, do you think, I don't even know how to quantify it, but like, how much better have they gotten? Do you have a good way to kind of like communicate that?
In prompt injections or in general?
To me, I guess prompt injection is a proxy of just like general attacks on models.
I think there were prompt injection attacks of the nature like ignore previous instructions and do this and that, right? I think they still can happen, right? Like you can say that, okay, if you ask a model directly to ignore something, it may not do it, but let's say if it's processing a web page, which is like thousands and thousands of tokens with a bunch of like HTML code and in some tag or something you put this, would the model still be susceptible? Probably yes. There are also a challenge that we know in AI, which is very unique to it, is that if it's an open weights model, for example, the adversary has access to the weights, so they could potentially create very sophisticated prompt injections, which are not built using these patterns, but they are built using optimization algorithms, right? So you are literally like trying to see what random string I can add that will nudge the model in that direction. And those kinds of attacks are very sophisticated. Some companies work on them, some researchers obviously work on them. So they're part of the what we call the adversarial training portfolio, but there are like infinite numbers of these, right? We are going to increasingly see those kinds of sophisticated attacks. A thing about prompt injections is that, and I'll give you an example with what happened with ML maybe 7, 8 years ago when self-driving cars were coming up. There was this research that, look, you could take a stop sign and you can add some like tape there, and you can make this car think that this is not a stop sign, it's like a 60-mile hour. But you never saw those attacks happen in practice, right? The reason was that there was not enough adversarial intention to do this. Outside of research, there was a story like this with prompt injections in 23, 24, and maybe 25 that people weren't building anything sophisticated for somebody to try and run a sophisticated attack. But now you are seeing agents, you are seeing Claude Bot and all those kinds of things. Now you are going to start seeing more and more sophisticated attacks because there is consequences to that. The other problem with what happened with self-driving car was that when you went to them and you said, look, it's possible, they were like, yeah, we are sure that's possible, but that's not our concern because the model doesn't look at a regular stop sign and thinks of it or classifies it correctly all the time. So the adversarial problem is a second order problem. The first order problem is that's not very reliable. We are still at that point with agents, that agents are not reliable and trustworthy even without an adversary being there. Right, you can give it, like, you can ask it a question without any adversarial intention, it will still get it wrong, and we have seen hundreds of examples of those. So when you go and tell people that, oh, this sophisticated prompt injections could happen, they're like, yeah, they can happen, but like my agent doesn't seem to be doing its job half the time anyway. And this was actually funny for us last year. We were trying to show some of these sophisticated attacks, and we just couldn't get the agents to work properly. So we couldn't reproduce those attacks because they weren't working properly, right? I think all of these things are improving quite fast. And now we know that many serious applications of agents, especially computer use and browser use agents, are severely slowed down because of concerns about prompt injections, because now they're processing untrusted input from like web pages, from calendar invites, emails, but then are connected to very consequential tools. So you really want to be sure that it's not being taken over or hijacked by an adversary.
That
So
lots of very interesting
you'll
good
see in
points.
1 year way more sophisticated prompt injection attacks than.
Oh yeah, and so actually, that this is a great segue. Like, where do we go from here? What's the future of the defensive side there? Anything on that?
I think it's very hard to predict things, especially the future, right? That's so we don't know. I think the progress in AI is still going to outpace, I think, what we can do as a defenders. And even though I'm in security, I think that's the way it should be, right? Like we should not try and defend things before there's a need for defense. You have to let people, build crazy things, and you got to come in there and say, okay, now it's gone crazy enough. I think the progress is still going to be there significantly on making it reliable at this point in time than trying to make it secure necessarily. But you are seeing increasingly that companies are opening up the doors of their enterprise to these sophisticated agents. So the concerns are going to definitely increase. Are there some classical techniques like, okay, if we are building an agent, let's not give it all the permissions from day one, right? Observe its behavior. All those things are going to play a role. I think we are much better with traditional and conventional security controls than with AI controls. But over a period of time, those conventional controls will not work. And then you will have to have these AI native controls kind of come in. So I think that we have no choice at this point in time. We have to really put in all our efforts to try and make these things secure or observable and trustworthy from the out. From whatever ideas we can throw are all good ideas, right? There is a severe amount of shortness, I think, in the field about people who know about AI. Like if you think about like the initial security people, they were not really born in security. They were systems people who figured out that some system problems are security issues. Initial network security people were network engineers who figured out that something was, going on. I think security teams need to also up their game quite a bit in their understanding of AI. And we are also trying to work on this to see if is there a platform that we can give where people can actually understand how AI, what AI is. Because if you don't understand what it is, you will not be able to secure it. And I think we see a huge gap in that.
Yeah, no, I think it's a definitely a, that's a really good point about the evolution of cybersecurity coming out of IT, and it just makes plain sense. Switching kind of completely different gear from the future to the very practical today, there's a bunch of people here, on this that are tasked with, defending networks or defending companies, defending multiple companies, like all kinds of things. From your perspective, you're in kind of day to day. Are there things that folks should do first, kind of beyond kind of like the obvious of like, hey, maybe giving, LLM root and like anybody on Discord can ping it, not being a great idea. How do you think about defending right now?
Yeah, I think it's as cliche as it gets, but you need to do an inventory first. Like you need to understand what all people are doing at this point in time, and get a sense of what your threat model is going to look at, right? Like for example, if you're building a customer-facing chatbot that is only looking into your public-facing documents and answering questions on that, you don't have to worry about very sophisticated prompt injections because maybe somebody might just get to say something stupid or whatever. It's not a security problem. It might be a legal and compliance problem. You should talk to them and see, okay, what is our sort of brand voice policies? But in that kind of case, you don't need to worry about like, okay, some sensitive data leaking because the model doesn't have access to sensitive data in that capacity. If you're building something that is accessing databases or like using like text to SQL or natural language to SQL, all those kinds of things, then your threat model changes completely because the model could attach to a tool that could make some SQL queries. So threat modeling is definitely very important, trying to understand sort of what kind of things your applications have access to and what are they supposed to be doing. Once you figure that part out, red teaming is always a good start. It taps out pretty quickly, but it's a good thing to still go through because you will at least get a sense of like what is possible. Just know that red teaming in the world of AI doesn't give you any sense of security, because even if red teamers find 10 different things and they may even patch it, there's going to be 11 different things that they haven't caught, right? So they only scratch the surface. I think observability is definitely important, like log every single prompt and response, right? Make sure that it's a pretty high volume data as well, or could be depending on what you're launching. Like, I mean, we have seen insane amount of data coming into our systems, but having a record of that where you can actually at least go back and see what's happening is always a great way of starting. And then, yeah, like talk to good startups who are doing some interesting work. Maybe they'll be able to give you some different insights. As I said, like, I don't want to, we don't sell to everybody. I think we are working particularly with people who have deployed some very serious production use cases. But, you know, it's always good to know as a security team what you can do and what you cannot do and where you need to bring in some other experts. But do
Absolutely.
educate yourself. I think that's going to the education piece. You have probably, you know, a year one way or another. Like if Anthropic, if you believe Anthropic, that's like 1 year later, none of us are going to have a job, right? But you have 1 year either way to kind of like up your game on AI. So either your jobs will continue to be there or you will, you know, work in AI in some other capacity.
It sounds like at this point in time, you know, auditing, like audit logging, is kind of like a thing you can do like fairly easily, but going anywhere beyond that, and I think that's kind of what you were talking about, like the big production systems where it's like, you know, it's worth kind of like spending the really heavy effort to like secure that. But the, you know, odds and ends in a small company, sadly, like there may not be a whole lot right now in terms of like active defense. Is that right?
Yeah, and many companies, what I've seen has worked for them. It tends to work better for larger companies, but they have created like a centralized platform, right? Like an internal platform, either on AWS or on their own, whatever. And the almost like the old IT, right? But this is sort of the AI platform, and every internal use case or every product is built and goes through this platform. And that becomes a central choke point where you can, you know, have your auditing and observability, you can have your guardrails or whatever it might be. So you know that people are not doing things behind your back, but the only way you can do that is if you give them a paved path, like, okay, walk through this, all of your use cases would be covered. We just want you to use this because we can observe what's going on. And that has worked really well for large companies.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah, I feel like it comes back to the old, you know, inventory and hygiene, right? Is always the best place to start from.
Yeah, it's just that everything has a different flavor in AI. Like observability in AI, like you can log prompt and response, and this is the bare minimum you have to do. But if you look at what could be the size of the prompt, it could be like thousands and thousands of like tokens. You're not going to read them, right? So you need other ML systems that can analyze them for you or tell you what's going on in these things. But obviously, logging is the first thing. But logging is not observability.
Yeah, no, that I can see that. That's a good point. And again, the Ouroboros, we go back to the, you know, the snake eating its tail with LLMs looking at LLMs.
Yeah.
Awesome. That was super interesting. Thanks a lot for coming in. If folks want to get in touch with you guys, is there a better way to do that?
Yeah, I mean, I can leave my email here in the chat if people want to send me a ping, or look me up on LinkedIn. We are going to be at RSA, as you've this might be the only marketing thing that I might say. But we are one of the top 10 in the sandbox, so come cheer us, and that will be a great opportunity to talk to us as well because we'll be there.
Awesome, awesome. Good luck. Good luck.
Thank you so much.
All
Thank
right.
you.
I will see everybody next week at the next Defender Fridays. Have a good weekend, everyone.
Take care.
Have a good weekend.
And that brings us to the end of another Defender Fridays discussion. Support our show by sharing your favorite episodes with a friend. Subscribe or give us a rating on whatever podcast platform you're listening from. If you want to be a part of the conversation and join us live, you can register at limacharlie.io/defender-fridays. Thanks for listening in, and we'll see you in the next one. The Cybersecurity Defenders podcast is hosted and produced by Christopher Luft. The show is co-produced and edited by Sam Blake with graphics by Amr Al-Khatib. Sponsored by Lima Charlie, scalable infrastructure for your security services. Visit limacharlie.io to get started for free.